On this long-awaited episode of Tips on the Top Floor, I'll finally go into detail on how to ditch your scanner and start digitizing your negatives and slides using your camera. We'll look at gear and all the methods that will make this a success for you. This episode is brought to you by Discover the Top Floor. Join us on a tour to the wild Atlantic coast of the northwest of Ireland with our excursion to some of the stunning places Game of Thrones has been filmed, to the stunningly beautiful Lofoten Archipelago in northern Norway, or on an amazing desert-themed photo tour to Morocco in August, September, and October later this year. Join a group of like-minded people, no matter if you're a pro or if you're still learning. We know all those places really well, and we'll make sure you'll be at the right spot at the right time to get some of the most amazing photography of your life. Learn to do the photography you've always dreamed to do. Find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 821 for the 3rd of May, 2018. Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right, from the top floor. Hey, hello and welcome. This is Chris Marquardt. You're listening to Tips from the Top Floor, episode 828. For, what is it, the 3rd of May, 2018. I'm looking up the date because I'm pre-recording this one because I am traveling, coming to New York on my way. And so this the topic of this episode is an interesting one because I didn't think it would stir up that many people. I got plenty of feedback when a couple of weeks ago I talked about digitizing negatives on using a camera, which, yeah, who would want to do this? Well, shows that a lot of film photographers are still out there, or a lot of you have old negatives at home and you want to do something with them. So let's look at different kind of scanners first. There's the flatbed scanner. For film, you will need one with a backlight unit, so that up in the lid there is a backlight. And yeah, the ones I use are by Epson, and then there are others. There's a Canon one, and there was one from Nikon, which they don't make anymore. And then there are those pull-through scanners, more like document-type scanners, the Fujitsu Snap Scan that I have here for my documents, and that I never use anymore because the smartphone has taken over. I'm photographing my documents now. But that is for documents and printed photos. It's not really that good for printed photos, but it's a scanner and it pulls the film or the, not the film, it pulls documents and photos through. There are film scanners that are actual cameras. You get these little 5-megapixel film, in air quotes, scanners that have kind of relatively low quality lenses, but they will do in a pinch for like not that important snaps. But in general, the better quality you will get from dedicated film scanners. There's still some available. They're pricey, they're slow, but they give you a decent quality output. But they take ages to scan a photo. The higher the resolution you go, the slower they get. Or there is the way to digitize a film by using your camera. Your mirrorless camera, your Micro Four Thirds, your Olympus, your Fuji, or your DSLR, and a macro lens, and a light table, and you're golden. So that's what we want to talk about today. Where does it make sense to do that? Well, if you take photos of negatives, and it initially doesn't matter black and white, or color negative, or color positive, slides, doesn't matter. You can photograph all of them. It does perfectly make sense for 35 millimeter negatives, because if you have a 25 megapixel camera and you take a photo of a 35 millimeter negative, you will end up with a bit of cropping. You will end up with a 20 megapixel photo of that negative. If you put the same thing on a scanner, a flatbed scanner, you could be lucky to get 7 megapixels out of it. They just aren't as good optically. And yes, you can set them higher, and then they'll take much longer to scan, but you do not really get better quality out of them. Flatbed scanners are just like that. So you have two advantages when you photograph your 35 millimeter negatives. Speed, because it's faster, much faster than scanning, and resolution, because you get three to four times the resolution at least, and it entirely depends on your camera. So that's the 35 millimeter. 120 negatives. With photographing them, you will not get that much of a resolution advantage. Scanners are in that ballpark that your camera can do. Unless you have like a 50 megapixel something, then yes, you are at an advantage with your camera. But let's say the average Joe, 16 to 35 megapixels, you'll have about the same resolution that you also get from a scanner. But that's, I would still photograph those because you will gain speed, lots of speed. The big surface of a 120 of a medium format negative is going to mean you have to scan even slower than for the 35. And that just will take time. And we're talking minutes per negative, 5 minutes per negative if you go higher resolution. So the speed advantage is definitely one of the reasons to take pictures of those. 4x5, large format, 4x5 inches. Again, you would have a speed advantage for sure, because scanning a 4x5 at the higher resolution is going to take ages. You can go make dinner, eat it, and take a nap, and then come back. Well, no, that was over. That was exaggeration, but it takes its time. So speed-wise, yeah, but resolution-wise, no. Your camera will probably not exceed the resolution of a scanner, of a scan of a 4x5 negative. I will typically get 70 to 100 megapixels out of a 4x5 negative on my flatbed scanner. So, yeah, 4x5, I don't photograph, I scan. But the others, 35 millimeter and 120, I photograph now. So, let's hear this.
Hi, Chris. This is Baz from the United States. Thanks for doing this great podcast. I can't tell you how many times I've had aha moments while listening to your show. The latest of these was you were talking about how you can scan film negatives using an LED light table and a tripod with a macro lens. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how you set that up, because that sounds like it could be a really great solution to the time-consuming task of scanning film negatives. Thanks.
Hi, Baz. Thank you so much for that question. Setting things up, yeah. Let's dive right in, because it's not that hard. First of all, you don't need to buy a new tripod. I know that some people have that problem of their tripod being not allowing the camera to look straight down. First, some have a middle column that you can invert, so you can attach the camera below it. You can turn that whole thing around, so that would be a solution. The other one is get a cheap ball head and a clamp and clamp that to the leg of your tripod. You don't need a tripod for that. You can do it on a shelf. You can do it on anything that you can put a little clamp on. I'll put a couple links in the show notes. Those are affiliate links. You won't pay more, but I'll get a small kickback. But that's seriously what I would suggest. Don't get a new tripod. Get a clamp that has a 3/8 inch or a 1/4 inch thread on it, and then put a ball head on that. The clamp, a two-pack of these is $17. A cheap ball head that will do the job is $20. And then you have this little clamp-on tripod thing that you can use anywhere. If you want to make it compatible with your Arca Swiss plates, then base plates, then there's a base plate that you can put on the ball head to replace the one that's on there for $11. I think you'll need to attach that ball head to the tripod or to the clamp. You will need a kind of a double 3/8 inch thread adapter. Two pack is $7.99. So you'll be, with a moderate investment, you'll have that all sorted out without having to buy a new tripod. I think that's the important part. And then you need that light table, of course. Little light table, thin. They're really thin, like half the width of a pencil. And they are $25. And they're LED based. You can power them from a little power bank or from a little LED power supply. USB power supply. And yeah, they'll do the job just fine. And then what you do is you set this all up in a way to put your macro lens on the camera, put that little light table on a table. I put it on a box kind of knee height and then put the tripod on top of it so I can easier look on the back of the camera, because the back of the camera has a live view on. I set the camera to live view. I do white balance on that light table. I set the light table as bright as it goes. It's not super bright, but hey, you're working on a tripod. You can do a tenth of a second exposure on a negative, no problem. So I have a little remote for the camera, and I set it to manual exposure. I set the exposure. I try a low ISO, of course. I set a medium aperture. The aperture is somewhere for full frame about f8, which is where the lens is nice and sharp. I use a macro lens. Mine is a 100 millimeter macro lens. And that works out well. And then I put the negative straight on the light table. Now, of course, negatives aren't all the same. So let me take a quick break, and then we'll talk about curling negatives and how to handle those. And of course, post-production and storage. Let me take a minute to talk about this week's sponsor, Format.com. Format makes it easy to build your own professional portfolio website without a single line of code. Oh, and in case you wonder how Format is different from all the other guys, well, it's simple. They focus on you, on visual artists, on designers, illustrators, and of course, photographers. It is essential these days to present your portfolio online and in style, and Format makes that easy and beautiful. Their themes look fantastic. I especially love their Aura theme. It's so clear and stylish, and it presents your photography in a really clean and pleasing way. And if you're planning to sell your photography, you can set up an online store on Format within minutes. They won't even charge a commission on store sales. Don't take my word for it. Give Format a try for free. Each plan includes your free personal domain. And what I really like, you can update your online portfolio directly from Lightroom. And I did just that. I set up a portfolio website. You can check it out at format.chrismarquardt.com. That's format.chrismarquardt.com. Uploading and updating my photos straight from Lightroom made it really easy. I just love it. They even feature built-in security to protect your photos with passwords and custom watermarks. And that's just scratching the surface. There's more, including a client-proofing workflow, a built-in blogging platform, and their iPhone app. And if you have questions, their 24/7 support is located around the world, so you can always get one of their experts to help you. Now, here's a special deal for you. You can try out Format for free for 30 days without a credit card. All you'll have to do is go to format.com/topfloor. That's format.com/topfloor, format.com/topfloor. And I thank them for the support. This episode is also brought to you by WeTransfer, and I might be repeating myself here, but I personally use them all the time to share big files around the world for free. WeTransfer is all about making the creative process easier and faster for everyone. There's no sign in, no offer codes, no password to forget. Just upload, send, and get back to making what you make. It's really that simple. 40 million people use WeTransfer to send and receive files every month. And since day one, they've devoted 30% of their ad space to showcasing creative people from around the world. Musicians, illustrators, photographers, and of course, podcasters like me. So in that spirit, let me skip the rest of this short ad and get on with the episode. All right, let's pick it up again. Curly negatives, how to handle those on a light table. Here's a question to that.
Hey, Chris, this is Joe from Maryland. And I had a follow-up question from last episode where you talked about film scanning with a DSLR. I actually bought one of those light tables a few months ago, but for the opposite direction you went, I did it to scan 4x5 because I only have an Epson 550, which won't handle 4x5 film. So I did that, and I took a number of pictures and merged them in Lightroom, and that turned out great. I'm hesitant to try it on my 35mm film because the film curls so much. So I was wondering what you did to prevent the curling. Did you create some sort of mask to put on top of the film to flatten it, or do you tape it down? Could you explain your process a little bit with that? And the second part...
Okay, let me cut this off. We'll go to the second part later. Curling negatives. Yeah, depending on the film manufacturer, you might have curling negatives. And what happens there? Okay, imagine you have a negative. If you cut that through and look at how it's composed, there's a plastic layer that is pretty much what holds the emulsion. And then there's an emulsion layer, which is gelatin and silver particles and colors and all sorts of interesting stuff in that emulsion. But the emulsion is, well, gelatin picks up humidity, and it's like if two layers are glued to each other and one layer expands with humidity and the other doesn't, then you will have something that curls. And that happens to film. Not to all films, interestingly, because some films have that layer only on one side, but other films will, or other manufacturers will, go the extra step to add a second anti-curling layer on the other side of the film. So you have kind of symmetrical film. You have the plastic layer in the middle, and both sides kind of sandwich in that layer with the gelatin coating. And then the humidity will affect both sides of the film the same way, and they won't curl as much. You can, for example, see this wonderfully with Ilford film. Ilford, medium format film, is one of the flattest films I know of. And it's amazing. If you hang that off, if you hang that to dry, you will see some curling because the layers don't dry at the same rate. But then once it goes dry, it's just flat. It's just super flat. I love that. I love that about Ilford film. And then others, I won't name names, but others are, yeah, a bit more unwieldy. And you have to kind of tame them a bit. Now, of course, you can just carefully tape them down. Be careful with fingerprints. Use a kind of a non-lint-free gloves kind of thing. And then tape them down with a bit of scotch tape. There's nothing wrong with that. Or I've seen people using glass on top. Now, it's possibly a bit problematic because you will, first of all, you might get some reflection artifacts. That's one thing. The other is that if you put glass on top of a piece of film and that on that contact area, you might get what's called Newtonian rings. Those are little rings that are pretty much light interference patterns that happen if you have these two surfaces be very close to each other. So that's a bit of a problem. There is so-called anti-Newton glass, which kind of takes care of that, but that only works... That doesn't really work looking through something that looks like on top of something that you scan from below. So... not really a good option. But in a pinch, it will work. I've seen people use scanner frames. Like, you have a flatbed scanner, and that scanner came with a frame that you can put the film in and kind of flatten it out there. Yeah, sure. Use it there. There's one tool that's called Digitaliza. Digitaliza. It's by lomography.com. I think BH Photo has the 120 version. I think the 35 millimeter version is backordered right now, but it's worth having a look. It's an interesting concept because you can put this film into that frame while still having the sprocket holes visible. So you could photograph the entire thing, including the sprocket holes. Some photography kind of wants that. Even with a frame, there is a chance of a bit of curling. And the way to work, well, the way to make that not an issue is you don't have to fully flatten it out. Close the aperture a bit because you will increase your depth of field. And that means that more of that curly film will be in focus. And I've used some. There is a slight geometrical change that you get from that. But depending on what you shoot, that is not an issue. There's one more way. I've seen a lot of people do that, and that's just make yourself a little mask out of black cardboard. Lay that on top of the negatives. 24 by 36 millimeters is the size of a negative. Make it slightly bigger so you're not losing anything at the edges. And then lay that on top of the negatives. Might be a bit fiddly, but hey, in a pinch, that should do the trick. All right, let's get into post-production, because that's now the interesting thing. Now I've taken all these photos, taken the photos with manual mode, low ISO, on a tripod, with a remote so you don't shake the camera, your macro lens, your white balance on the background so that it's kind of somewhere in the middle. And now you have those photos somewhere on your memory card, and what are you going to do with it? And let's look at different kinds of film, that the three different kinds of film that we're dealing with here. The first is a black and white negative. The second is a color negative. And the third is a color slide, which is a positive. And that's the easiest one. The third is the easiest one. The color slide, you scan. I'm using scan now as the generic term for getting that thing digitized with a camera. But you scan it into the computer and you do a bit of cropping and that's it. Done. Maybe some contrast correction, some little bit of exposure correction, depending on how you expose it with your camera. But hey, that's pretty much it. Color slides are simple. Color slides are fun. They're also hard to expose, right? Because they are, you can't be too much off in terms of exposure. Slides are just like that. Second is the black and white negative. And again, you scan that. You have to invert it and then you're done. But inversion in Lightroom is difficult. So if you use Lightroom, you might have seen the tip that you can invert the curve, which does work. But then the sliders are all wrong. And the exposure slider goes darker to the right, brighter to the left, and the highlights and black and white and so on aren't doing what you expect them to do. It can be a bit of a confusing thing. I have plenty of those in my Lightroom library and I kind of gotten used to it, but it's not fun. It's not fun. So what I'm now doing is I photograph those and I open them in Affinity Photo or use Photoshop, whatever you have, and invert them. Command I, invert them. And then save them and then import them to Lightroom and so on. It's just so much easier. The inversion, the scanner software, that's an advantage that your scanner software has. It does that inversion for you. Now, when you take the photo, you have to do the inversion. But after that, hey, it's a photo. Crop out the sprocket holes, crop out the edges. If you want to leave them in, some film photographers love to leave the black frame in. So as to show people that this is film, this is something special. But yeah, in general, do whatever you want to do with it in post-production. Don't forget to put some keywords in. Makes it easier to find later. There's no EXIF data in those usually. Well, the problem is the EXIF data is the EXIF data from your camera, because that's what you took the picture with. So if you want to go the extra mile, get something called EXIF tool. It's a bit involved to use it, but some people change the EXIF data using that. There are other EXIF changers. I think there's one called EXIFer and some more. I don't use those. So I put some metadata in there myself in the keywords, and that is good enough for me to be able to find them later. The third kind of negative is a bit harder to deal with.
Hi, Chris. This is Ed from Arizona. First of all, congratulations on 13 years podcasting. That's a remarkable achievement. I really enjoy the show. I've been listening since 2010. My question has to do with photographing negatives instead of scanning. It sounds like a great idea. I'm sure it'll save a lot of time. What do I do with the orange mask that's on color negative, so? And what do I do to make the negative into a positive image for printing and editing? I'm using Photoshop CS5 and Lightroom 6. Looking forward to your answer and looking forward to the next 13 years of the podcast. Keep up the good work.
30 more years. Oh, my God. Thanks, Ed. The color negatives and the orange mask. That's a bit of a pain. So, okay, if you've ever held a color negative, you'll know that it's kind of brownish orangish in tint, and that's not a filter. It's called a mask. A filter would be uniform and kind of easy to remove. But that's a mask, and it masks out some of the It's hard to explain, but it's a mask in two of the three color layers. There's a CMY color, cyan, magenta, yellow layers in the film, and in two of those there are orange and yellow dye to correct some color problems in those layers. If it were a filter, yeah, you could simply sample the orange mask, subtract it from the image, and get a good negative, but the result is normally not that good, and you end up with a blue tint in the photo when you just invert them. I could go into more detail how this works, but in general, you have these colored couplers, that's what they're called, and they ensure that the magenta layer only controls green light and cyan layer only controls red light, and very involved. But the combination of those different masks, the yellow and the magenta masks, produce that orange color of the color negative, and it is just a fact of life. There are, I think, there's one or two films out there that don't have the orange mask. You can search for Digibase, DigiBase. Those are color negative films that are specially made for digitizing, and they don't have an orange mask. So there are some films out. Or shoot slide film to get positive, but then you do not get the other properties of film, of negative film, which is the latitude. The fact that you can over under expose them by several stops and you don't really have a problem. The film is very very good at handling that. So how to handle the color negative in the inversion? Well, the first way is use a scanning software. Use a scanner and scan them. Now, of course, you end up with the time disadvantage and the resolution disadvantage. But the one thing scanning software does is it has pretty good color correction built in. If you happen to be in the position to have an old Nikon ED9000 scanner and a software that came with it and a computer that still runs on, you're golden. That is one of the best color corrections for color negatives that I've ever seen. It's really, really good. So that is one way to handle that. But of course, we want to do it differently, right? We want to do it in a different way. And there is a method which has been around for a while. There's several methods. If you Google that, if you go on YouTube, there are plenty of videos. There's a lot of garbage out there, honestly. A lot of stuff that just doesn't really work or doesn't make sense. But there's one method that works quite well and has just been updated with the latest Photoshop cloud version, the CC version, because there's a new function in there. And it's by imthejeff.com. And that guy has documented that thing online and he's made an action available. It's a very reliable color correction. It looks very, very good. But you do need the latest Photoshop and in there you will use a layer mode that I'm not sure how long it has been in there, but it's called divide. And then you divide that out of the thing, and then you use an auto option in a curves layer that fixes the rest, and the result is astonishingly good. I'm really surprised how good it is. But I'm a CC cloud subscriber by Adobe, and it means that I have these tools, but not everyone does. So that's a bit of a bummer for some of you. You just mentioned you have a Photoshop CS5 and Lightroom 6, so I think with CS5 you won't be able to do it. But I will link to that method. If anything, the method overcorrects a bit in the way that you have an old film that is, I don't know, 10 years over its date, and using that expired film, and you are hoping for some interesting color shifts, because that's what color negative film will do if you just leave it out for a few years. But you end up getting photos that look almost perfect because the conversion in Photoshop is so good. Anyway, but it's worth trying if you have those tools available to you. There are a few apps out there. There's an Android app called Helmut Film Scanner, H-E-L-M-U-T. That's a German first name. Helmut Film Scanner. That I have no experience with it. I found it and it looks it looks promising. There's another one called Lomo Scanner, also for Android. They're both on the Play Store. So those might work well for the conversion. It's worth a try. And there's an app that is not quite out yet for iOS, but there's a guy, I backed the Kickstarter project. It's called Film Lab. He's working on this app that doesn't just do a conversion, but that you can use your smartphone to shoot a picture of the film, and it will invert and convert this for you and crop it and do all the stuff. That's at least the plan. I think it's worth a look. Again, it's not out yet. I don't know when it will be out. I think he mentioned sometime this year. So let's hope that that he'll make the progress. But those are some of the options. And then, yeah, go Google, search YouTube. Let me know if you find a good version, a good conversion method that works. That Photoshop one, I'd be super happy if someone can find out a way to do this in Affinity Photo. If you find a way to do this in Affinity Photo, that would be amazing. So if you know a way, let me know and I'll put it on one of the next episodes. All right, back to Joe's comment that I rudely cut off earlier.
And the second part was for storage. I have a laptop with a 1 terabyte hard drive that's hitting up against its limit. With that, what do you recommend for external storage? Should I get 2 external hard drives and mirror them, one main and one for backup? And I also do a backup to the cloud. It gives me my 3 copies. Could you explain the best process for holding all your images for that? Thanks. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Storage, I think, doesn't really matter if you're shooting film or digital. Storage is always a bit of a topic. And you already said it. You have 3 copies, or you want 3 copies, and that makes perfect sense. Storage for pictures become part of an overall photo storage if they come from film. They go into Lightroom here, and then they become part of my backup system automatically, pretty much. And I do use 3 different tiers. If you never want to lose photos, you should have those 3 copies, and one should be on site. In this case, I have a Time Machine copy that here on the Mac. This is pretty much built in. It's automatic. It's hourly. And this way, I don't really have a big time window to lose photos. I have one that's away from the computer. It's downstairs on a NAS, a Synology NAS. That's the nightly backup that goes there. And that saves me from most issues. But then, of course, for If your photos are your livelihood, or if you would feel that losing photos would be the worst thing in your life, then you need an offsite backup. You need a backup somewhere in the cloud. The system I use is ARQ, which is a software backup, a backup software that works on Windows and on the Mac. It's my favorite, but there are others as well. So if you have something that's working for you, don't switch to ARQ. And the storage behind it that I have is by wasabi.com. They are, I think they set off to be competition to Amazon with their S3 storage. They have pretty much a storage that is compatible with Amazon's S3 storage. So any software that can back up to S3 can also back up to Wasabi, but the prices are better. So I like that about them. And I have 3-4 terabytes of storage up on Wasabi, of images and lots of other stuff. ARC does the not just the backup, but also the encryption. So it's all fully encrypted. So wherever it is in the cloud, I don't really care, because it should be pretty hard to crack that. So that's what I do for storage, and that's how I digitize my negatives. Now, it does sound like a very involved process, and I think the first time you do it, you probably wanna try a few things and figure out what works best for you. But I figured this out for myself, and now setting up the camera and the light table for scanning takes 2 minutes. Scanning a roll of film takes 5 minutes max, absolutely max. And then The cropping, post-processing, inverting takes another 5 minutes. So I'm done with really good results, high speed and very good quality and resolution in almost no time. All right, that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. If you've digitized some of your negatives with your camera, come on over to the TFTTF Slack. We have a film photography channel, which is the perfect place to hang out with other film photographers and share your photos and discuss cameras and stuff. Let me check. Greg just posted a photo of a tiny Canon half-frame camera that I've never seen before. Lots of cool stuff there. And thanks again, everyone, for your support. If you want to help keep TFTTF going, I'd appreciate if you had a look at tfttf.com/support. Thank you so much for your help. And of course, thanks also to Format and WeTransfer for helping make this episode possible. Also, don't forget to send in your voicemails. You know I love getting your questions and your feedback and everything from you. Simply record on your smartphone, send to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, sound partner Hans-Peter Kagrud, publishing and Slack challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rev, Sitar Armstead, and the Slack invitations, of course, by Chief Invitation Officer, CIO, Rusty Russ. My name is Chris Marquardt. Go out and take amazing photos. Be nice to each other. And as always, happy shooting.